This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
Welcome to Joy on Paper, a program for writers and those who dream of writing, and for everyone who wants to know the story behind the book. Coming to you from glorious Clearwater, Florida, the perfect place for writers to write and readers to enjoy a good book. And anyone out there in Tampa, if you're going to be heading to the beach this weekend, because we have wonderful weather, it's just fantastic. I have Bill Larson here in the studio with me. He is our legal eagle, and we're going to be talking about all of your intellectual property questions in a minute. Hi, Bill.
Good morning.
Okay. Isn't it wonderful to have good weather again?
Oh, it's gorgeous.
None of us, we are not made for cold weather. I did not enjoy that little bit of Michigan weather that they I blamed my brother. I said, "Why did you send it to me? I don't need it. I don't need it." Because today it's going to be 85 degrees.
That's right.
Isn't that fantastic? That makes me so happy. And so anyone who's in Tampa and you're planning to come out here to the beaches because it's going to be a beautiful, beautiful week and weekend, stop by Book Swap of Carrollwood first and pick up some good books. They have a lot of books there, and I'm sure you'll find something that you love. Well, I am so happy, Bill, to have you in here today because I've been getting intellectual property questions from people. And one of the things I want to tell everyone on my new website, which is radio-joyonpaper.com, I have a form there that you can fill in with your intellectual property question. You can just fill it in and it'll come directly to me so that I can ask Bill every month when he comes in. You don't even have to send me an email, although you can at patsy.radio@gmail.com. And Bill will answer your questions. So, Bill, a couple of things, you know, have come up. And one of them, of course, is I sent you this information about, you know, there are so many different organizations out there who are, the minute they, you know, a writer starts looking at services to help them publish or to help them do publicity, they get on a list and they get endless emails suggesting that they use their services. And I'm warning all of my listeners that you have to be very, very careful.
Very careful.
Very careful. Yeah. And some of them, now, they have a way, you know, it's a sales business and they can suck you in very easily. You start with a small fee. And then the next level, you go to a bigger fee and a bigger fee, right?
Right. The fees increase as you go along.
As you go along. Now, I want everyone to really think seriously about, before you do that, that you really have to investigate these companies. And in some cases, it's really easy to find some of them because if you just write the word scam next to their name, and if it comes up on a list of scam, I would suggest you not contact them. But like I sent you a copy of a contract that one company sent.
Yes.
Now, isn't it a bad idea for anyone to sign a contract without a lawyer?
Yeah, they want to have a lawyer take a look at it first.
Because, you know, I am talking from personal experience, people. Believe me, you will be sorry someday if you have signed a contract. And when somebody sends you a contract online, okay, they say, "Oh, it's a simple little contract." That's a bad thing, isn't it?
Usually, yes.
Because those simple little contracts can really
come back to bite you later.
Exactly.
Yeah, if you don't have a lawyer, look at it and make sure that there's no words in there that are giving away your copyrighted book. So, what you should do is, and we should go back to the beginnings about how an author goes from the very beginning to the very end, right? And in the very beginning, when you're writing your book, initial it. Date it, right? Find some proof that as you're writing it, if it's either digitally or on paper, that you record what you're doing as you go along, because that's important evidence that show it's original to you, all right? And then as the book is going along and it's getting to a finished point, you're going to need an editor probably, right? You're going to have to look for somebody to help you. So it's not unusual that these companies are out there because authors do need help to get it from the paper to the place where it's being either sold or converted into a movie. So you want to be very careful about who you deal with. So if you keep accurate records of your authorship, and then when it's completed, file your copyright application. Now you're pretty safe right there. You can prove that it's original to you, and you can show that you own the copyright. Okay, so that's out of the way. Now you've got to get it to the next level, which is either on the bookshelves or moving, on sales on Amazon, or eventually, as in this case, getting it in front of folks in Hollywood to try to get it made into a movie. So the most important thing our listeners have to remember is that check out who you're dealing with. Do your due diligence, all right? If somebody says, you know, give me $20,000 and I'll get you where you need to go, then ask them the question, well, you know, how many people have you dealt with and how many people made it to the promised land, right? So if you dealt with 1,000 clients, how many of that 1,000 actually made it, all right? And those statistics matter, okay? Because a lot of people that you may deal with on the internet may give you advice that's not good, or they'll give you advice that's not going to get you anywhere. You're going to spend a bunch of money for basically a bag of rocks because they don't have the credentials to get you where you think you want to go. So make sure you ask the hard questions about who this person is, what their experience is exactly. And the same goes for lawyers. So if a client comes to me and wants to hire me, they should ask me, well, how many copyrights have you done? How many lawsuits have you been involved with? How many trademark applications have you filed? How many patents have you been involved with? How many licenses have you written? Those are the things that you should ask somebody before you sign a contract with them or give them money.
And if you belong to the, if you're dealing with intellectual property, they should belong to what association?
The AIPLA is the best of the IP, the intellectual property lawyers. And so you pretty much guaranteed if you find somebody on the AIPLA list, you're going to get a good lawyer. But, you know, as you were just saying, a lot of times we get solicitations, okay? So the writers are getting solicitations from companies. We're going to help you. We're going to help you. We're going to help you. I liken it, and there's an analogy you've probably seen on TV, the invention submission companies, okay? Come to us. Give us your invention. We're going to write you a patent, and we're going to get it in front of a business, and you're going to get a license, and you're going to make a whole bunch of money, okay? Well, if you ask them, you know, what percentage of the patent applications that you turn into patents actually get purchased and how much money have those people made, you'll see that it's really low. Really low. So that's not the way to go typically. Typically, if it's somebody who's advertising heavily or is soliciting you on the internet.
Well, I could tell you, all the listeners, that Bill also handles 4 patents that I am involved with, and his company is amazing. When they do the research, and when they come out and give an opinion on a patent, you know that they've done a great job. So they are amazing. And you want the same thing with intellectual property.
With your copyrights, yeah.
With your copyrights.
You need to know who you're dealing with. And so ask the hard questions. And if the person can't give you that resume and can't show what their experience is and why you should pay them money and how they're going to get you to where you want to go, then, you know, you're not dealing with the right person.
And particularly for anyone who is dealing with Hollywood, I do want to tell everybody that it is very common in Hollywood to claim that you have been in the business for 20 or 30 years. But that doesn't mean you've been at the top of the business for 20 or 30 years. You might have, you know, been a miscellaneous crew, and there are thousands and thousands of people who are on the sets in Hollywood, and many of them will claim that they have been in the business, but I would not give them my book because most of them can't read, if you ask me, but you have to be careful, right?
Yeah, so if you're going to pay somebody a bunch of money, and in some of the cases we've seen, it's in the $20,000 range, to kind of convert your book to a screenplay and supposedly get it in front of the right people. That's a lot of money. That money may be spent better in other ways.
Much, much, much better ways, I can assure you.
But, you know, the fact remains that authors do need help. More typically what's going to happen is if you have a really great book and it's going to get picked up by readers and it's going to gain its own momentum, basically.
Exactly.
Then the producers in Hollywood are going to be like, wow, this is a really hot book here. Somebody get a hold of the author.
Exactly.
And then they'll write the screenplay because they're going to write it in a certain way. Because Hollywood's not just one big basket of folks. It's microcosms of different folks that make different kinds of movies. And so if you're a sci-fi or it's a love movie or a war movie or what it is, you've got to get it in front of those certain right people who deal with those types of movies, and they're not just kind of just scattered around the street hoping somebody's going to pick it up.
Exactly. Now, one of the things I was wondering, when if somebody writes a book that has, let's say it is a book about current events, perhaps that includes, you know, discussion of not just events but of people currently in the news. Do people ever ask you to actually read the book before it's published to give an opinion?
As to whether or not it's
There is something, I don't remember what it's called, some kind of
there's a right to publicity. So if you have a person who's alive and you put them in a bad light in your book or say things that are damaging to them, you could be sued. And that could be a tort. That could be a harm to that person. So, yes, you have to be careful about what you put in your book. So if somebody brought me a book to look at and I saw that there was a living person who was being talked about in a bad light, I might warn that client, you know, there's a possibility of risk here because if it's not true, truth is always the defense, and you put the person in a bad light, that could damage them, and then you could end up
Is that what's called an opinion of counsel?
Yeah, a lot of times you'll get an opinion of counsel. We'll give what's called clearance opinions or non-infringement opinions and stuff like that. So the lawyer will take a look at it and tell you whether or not you have a problem with the law.
And that's very important, particularly if you are why I bring this up. I have a listener who has written what I think will be an interesting book. Okay. I've read parts of it. But let's say the person is famous, the main person is famous, and I mean it's a factual book. He is basing it on news articles and
facts,
interviews
facts are fair
and
game,
things.
Always.
Like
facts.
Yeah. But there are, let's say some people might be quoted as saying bad and uncomplimentary things about this personality. Now, if he has these quotes from people, and they're real quotes, and in most cases he has actually taped them. You know, he's taped interviews with people about this person. And so he has it on tape. Now, does that relieve him of any?
Not necessarily, no, because what those other people are saying may not be true. So you can't hide behind that. Yeah, I mean, it has to be true, okay? You can say bad things about people if they're bad people and it's true, but you can't say bad things about people if it's not true. And just because somebody else said it, you know, it's hearsay, doesn't mean you can repeat it and that you have some kind of safe harbor. That's not the way it works.
That's not the way it works.
Not the way it works, no. So, you know, there's facts and then there's alternative facts, right? That's the what's new now. But so you better be very careful about what you're saying if it's going to be factually true. You better be able to back it up with something more than just the hearsay of somebody.
So it's not good enough just to have it on tape?
No, it's not good enough.
Not good enough. So in this case, the person really should think seriously either about taking the book and making it into fiction or... You know, if he's so determined to write this story because he thinks it's an important story that we should know about this personality, but I'm wondering if he's not just asking
for
fiction. Trouble.
Right, turn it into fiction.
And then just whisper to everybody what it's really about. Can you do that?
Wink, wink, nod, nod. People will kind of understand.
People will understand.
Right.
Because, I mean, the personality is, you know, well-known, and nobody's ever written a book about him before that certainly in this way. Mm-hmm. And the author came upon the story from actually meeting an ex-wife. and I have a feeling there are a lot of digs in there. The ex-wife was not. Now, if he turned it around and made it a story about the ex-wife as the main character and she's talking badly about her, that's still... legally troubling.
Well, yeah, if you're just going to parrot what she said, that's one thing. I don't know how that makes a story. That's kind of falls more into news. So it depends what you're writing.
Yeah. Okay, so see people,
there's no clear line.
You really need to think about things before. And on top of it, as I mentioned to you, he has taken a photograph from a magazine, and he has, you know, colorized it and added a few things. Mm-hmm. Now, that falls under that. What was that case? The Obama poster case, where the
derivative work case.
The derivative work, yeah.
Right. I would say.
What happened?
So the photographer is the person that owns the original copyright.
even if he works for somebody like in I think in the Obama case, the guy worked for AP. Usually the photographer keeps his rights?
Depends what they have in their contract with their employer. So in some cases, you can maintain your copyright. In other cases, it's work for hire. And so the
which is a smart thing to do.
Work for hire means the boss owns it, the company owns it.
It's smarter to try to keep it for yourself because you never know when you get a really great
photograph. Always better to keep it for yourself. Have more to do later with it. And so then they took that photograph and they added to it. Right, they modified it by adding color and changes a little bit. In copyright law, that we call that a derivative work. Well, that derivative work is still owned by the person that took the photograph. All right, so just because you added to it, it may mean that you have a new copyright, but it doesn't mean that you can defeat the earlier copyright because the derivative work is based on the prior work. Okay, so the copyright stays with the original photographer.
Yeah, I just remembered the guy's name. It's the guy who did the poster is named Shepard Fairey, and that was a popular poster. Wow,
it's very popular.
I mean, it's in the Smithsonian. It's in the big museum. I mean, it's big.
Yes.
You know, and it made a big difference, I think, in the election and sort of the whole outlook of things. So it became a major, and I have a feeling he made him a lot of money out of it.
Probably did.
But he got sued. And I think he lost.
And I don't remember specifically what happened in that case, but fact remains that if you take somebody else's work, a photograph or anything, and embellish it or change it or whatever, it's still the copyright of that prior person.
Yeah. Well, the photographer was working, as I remember, for AP.
So they probably owned the AP.
Oh, yeah. And the worst thing that actually happened, if you remember, he actually tried to change and he destroyed evidence and he landed up getting
that'll
criminal.
Always get in trouble.
Yeah,
with the judge.
You never do that.
Yeah,
you never
exfoliation.
Do that. Yeah, that's not a good idea, is it?
No, no. Never good to destroy evidence. Yeah. If you have bad evidence, you just got to deal with it. But destroying evidence is never a choice.
Yeah, so that's not a good idea. So I would, again, you know, it's so funny. We, as authors, you know, we come up with really great ideas and if it is something that's based on a real person, you have to be careful.
You have to be careful because you might damage that person. You could damage their reputation.
Yeah, I think this book will damage this person's reputation. I mean, just from the few chapters he gave me, I never knew this about this person. So I was like sort of a little bit shocked. So that it could be,
if it's true, you're safe.
If it's true, you're safe. Well... But he'd have to prove it.
Prove it's true.
And that can be
difficult.
And that could be very difficult, especially for a poor author.
Because typically you weren't there and you didn't personally see it. You're gathering this information from others.
Now, in his case, I think he tried to shop it around. I don't think he found a publisher. Perhaps because the person, I think the publishers didn't want.
A little too risky.
Risky. Mm-hmm. If he self-publishes it, is there such a thing as an author insurance? I mean, can you get insurance to be sued?
Yes, you can.
Yeah?
Advertising injury or defamation insurance.
So if he decides to go ahead with it, he should really...
Get a really big policy
because this person is really rich and you would he would sue.
A lot of those insurance agreements are going to, if you have an intent to harm somebody, you can't buy insurance and to cover you when you intentionally hurt somebody. And the insurance company would deny coverage on something like that.
I want to go back to what we talked about, contract. The contracts are that they send over the internet. What's the difference between a contract and a release?
Well, a release means you're giving something up. Okay, typically a release means that you're giving up your right to sue somebody or you're giving up the right to sue in any particular court. Maybe now you have to go to arbitration, so you're giving away rights. That's what a release means.
And so, I'm not going to say even generally speaking. Oh, listen, people, don't sign anything that somebody sends you over the internet. Really,
that's good advice.
Don't do it. It's not a matter of generally speaking. You shouldn't. You just shouldn't do it. I'm telling you, don't do it. Find a nice intellectual property lawyer like Bill Larson here. He knows his business. He can keep you safe and protect you because you don't want, you know what happened? Stephen King you know, all of you people are putting your stories out there in all sorts of different forms in the media. You're sending them out. And I know it's, you want, you're hoping always that somebody's going to see them. But for example, in the case of Stephen King, he had a short story called The Lawnmower Man. It was a very short story. Nobody would have even thought about making a movie. And somebody made a movie called The Lawnmower Man.
That's correct.
And it wasn't anything he wanted his name on. And he of course, being Stephen King, he could go out and sue. And
he had the muscle and the money to take
care of it. And he got $2.5 million.
That's a lot of money.
You know, for that, well, he got more. Did you realize that what happened after that? The company New Line Cinema actually they stopped the film, but they sold the videos, or at the time I suppose DVDs, CDs, whatever we were using in those days, and they kept his name on it. And he actually sent private investigators around the country, going to video stores when they still existed, and found them with his name on it, and he got a. What's that legal thing where you get really in trouble with the court?
Sanctioned.
They got sanctioned.
Well, because they...
They lied. They said they wouldn't do it, and they did it. So you don't want to do that.
No, definitely not.
And you don't want somebody to steal your short story. So you have to be careful, right?
Very careful. In terms of the release here, I'm reading the contract that you provided me, and says, I hereby release the company and its affiliates for any and all claims, liabilities, and demands that may be made asserted against the company. So you just waived your rights. So if they do something wrong, you can't sue them.
Exactly.
So that's the kind of stuff that we weed out. The lawyers will weed out and say, no, we're not, you know, if you do something bad, you're getting sued. We're not leaving that. And you have the right to waive your rights. That's a right. You have the right to waive your rights. Right? You have the right to having your Miranda rights, right? But you can waive that. You can waive your constitutional rights. You can waive your legal rights. And all you have to do is sign something like
sign
this
document that somebody has sent
gone.
You as an attachment, and say it, and then they put in the main part of the email. It's just a little thing we need just to make everything right and proper. And you sign it, and you are going to be sorry. I tell you that.
The other thing in here it says is that in the event of this dispute, it'll go to the county court in Los Angeles, California. Well, that's about a 10-year battle. Because the courts in Southern California are very, very busy.
Exactly. So, people, please listen to Bill Larson. And, Bill, how can they get in touch with you?
Find us on the World Wide Web at LarsonPatentLaw.com.
And you will be happy because you will get the right advice. You will protect your intellectual property. You won't have sleepless nights worrying about... Why did I sign that? Why did I sign that? Oh my gosh! What did I just do? And you'll just have nightmares for the rest of your life.
If your gut tells you not to sign it, don't sign it.
Hey, that's
send
good.
It to a lawyer.
That's good advice. Okay, well, Bill, thank you so much for coming in today. It's
my pleasure.
Great to see you. As always, your advice is great. Everybody, go to my website, radio-joy on paper, and if you have an intellectual property question, fill in the form, and next month, Bill's going to answer your questions. Okay, thank you so much, Bill, and bye-bye now. We're going to take a commercial break. Bye.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
Are you an author, an artist, an inventor? Then you need to protect your valuable intellectual property. You need Larson & Larson. We have the experience and knowledge to help you with all of your legal needs, from processing trademark, copyright, or patent applications, to negotiating licensing agreements and handling litigation. The attorneys at Larson & Larson in Largo, Florida, can help protect you. Call us today for a no-cost consultation at 727-546-0660 or visit our website at LarsonPatentLaw.com.
Hello, I'm Mike Lindell, the inventor of MyPillow. And like all of you out there, I had problems sleeping. Pillows would go flat. I would flip-flop all night long. I would wake up with a sore neck, maybe a headache, or feel like I needed a nap even though I slept 8 hours. When I invented MyPillow, I wanted it to where you can move the patented fill to give you the exact support you need as an individual, regardless of sleep position. MyPillow will get you into that deep sleep faster, and you will stay there longer. It's not about how much time we spend in bed. It's about how much of that quality sleep we get. I do all of my own manufacturing right here in the United States. I have a 10-year warranty. You can wash and dry MyPillow, and I give you a 60-day money-back guarantee, so you have nothing to lose. And here's my best offer ever.
MyPillow is now offering 50% off their 4-pack special.
Support Joy on Paper and local authors. Go to MyPillow.com and use promo code PATSY, P-A-T-Z-I. Or call 1-800-871-1543. That's 800-871-1543.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
With a Z, and I am back, and I have another guest in the studio today. This is going to be a wonderful day. I have Chris Hufnagel in the studio with me, and we're going to be talking in a few minutes about websites and SEOs and all sorts of interesting stuff. But first, I'm going to play one book buzz from Rita Moreau, because she's having fun with these book buzzes, and she just loves to do them, loves to promote authors, so we'll do that. Are we ready? Okay.
Hey, this is Rita Moreau reporting for Joy on Paper with the latest book buzz mystery from Florida's King of Mayhem, best-selling author Tim Dorsey's latest, The Pope of Palm Beach, is another madcap adventure. Here's the buzz. No one worships the Sunshine State as much as Serge A. Storms. Perpetually hunting Floridian arcana and lore, he and his permanently baked sidekick, Coleman, are on the road again. This time, they're on a frenzied literary pilgrimage that leads them back to Riviera Beach, the cozy seaside town where the boys spent their formative years. Growing up, Serge was enthralled by the legend of Riviera Beach, also known as Darby, a wilder at the port who surfed the local waves long before the hot spots were hot. A god on the water, the big-hearted surfer was a friend to everyone. The younger surfers, cops, politicians, wealthy businessmen, and ordinary Joes. A generosity of spirit that earned him the admiration of all. Meanwhile, there was a much murkier legend that made the rounds of the schoolyards from Serge's youth. That of the crazy hermit living in a makeshift jungle compound further up the mysterious Loxahatchee River than anyone dared to venture. Then Serge moved away, but never forgot. Now he's back, with those legends looming larger than ever in the rearview mirror of his memory. As his literary odyssey moves north from Key West, closer and closer to his old stomping grounds, Serge digs into the past as only Serge can. Along the way, he unintentionally disturbs some long-forgotten ground, attracting the attention of a cast of villains that only Florida can produce. As the body count grows, so does the list of questions. Fans of wacky crime fiction will have plenty of fun with The Pope of Palm Beach, a witty and deliciously violent delight from the twisted imagination of Tim Dorsey. This is Rita Moreau reporting for Joy on Paper. For more of my suggestions, go to our webpage, www.radio-joyonpaper.com, and click on Book Buzz. That's radio-joyonpaper. Rita Moreau, buzzing off for now.
Okay, so we're back here in the studio with Chris Hufnagel. Now, the reason I invited Chris is, one, because he gave me excellent free advice. I was going crazy looking for a way to do my new website. Now, everybody clicks on and goes, and you can see that I have a really great new website with lots of content. I have the interviews, I have blog posts, I have all sorts of stuff. And I was going absolutely crazy one day, and I'm clicking on and clicking on things. And then I come to Chris Hufnagel's site, and he's got a great website, and he does web pages. So, Chris, tell us a little bit about yourself, because what I loved about Chris's page, I clicked on it, and right away he popped up, and he started, like, chatting with me, saying hello. And I was so surprised it was a real person. At first I thought it was like a computer. I think, no, he's a real person. And then so he was just chatting nicely, and he answered questions, and he said something really, which I had not thought about. And I can tell you, I would have done this whole website without ever even thinking about it. He said, like, put the name in the title of an article so that, you know, it's searchable. So, Chris, thank you for coming into the studio today.
Thank you for having me.
Okay. So tell us first a little bit about your business and about you, and then we'll talk about websites in general.
Sure. I do freelance web design. I've been doing it for 6 years. I've always been into computers. Before that, I did computer forensics, and I went to a technical high school for computers and that sort of thing. So I've always been into computers.
And so you started your own company to do websites because you love to do them?
Yeah, so I was working for a company. We did a lot of government contracts and that sort of thing. It was more of computer forensics and helping out local police departments with if they had cases that involved computers and that sort of thing. And I was doing websites on the side to make some extra money. I had a house at the time, and we were like, oh, we want to fix up some things. I was like, I don't want to build websites. I'll build a couple. And I started making more money doing that and really enjoyed having the creativity and be able to, like, have all of the control over what I was making. So I decided to go freelance a few years ago and never looked back.
Oh, well, I looked at your website, of course, and you do beautiful websites. And you know, authors really need to have a nice website. Now, in my case, I will tell you that I had to do the work myself for a reason, because my website is very complicated, unlike an author's website. I have so many different things. I have recent guests, past guests, I have archives, I have video, I have a lot of stuff. And I think if I would have hired you, you'd be able to buy a new car because it would have been so expensive, right?
Yeah, with complicated sites like that, one of the first parts is always figuring out the information architecture and how you lay out everything and how you can make it flow the best for the user. So yes, that would probably be the biggest expense, be figuring out how we would organize everything to make it easiest. And then the coding and all of the design stuff is still the same as pretty much any other website. It's just figuring out how it all connects and works together.
Well, that is the thing. Of course, in order to do my website, Chris would have had to get into my mind, which is would not have been a pleasant thing, because there's so much going on in this head of mine that it would have driven you crazy. But I mean, I knew what I wanted. In my case, I knew what I wanted. I want to be able to bring these videos and the massive archives. I'm just heading now into the third anniversary of my program, and I've now talked to almost 300 people, like 250 authors and 50 literary agents and people like that. And that's a lot of content, a lot of content, and to try to get it all organized in the right way. So it would have been really difficult. But for the average author who needs a page about themselves, about their books, perhaps a little blog. So how do you do that when you're working with somebody like that? How do you go about it?
It really depends. If they come to me and they don't have any website, I usually will present to them the option of them doing it themselves and give them some resources, because I do find that if somebody builds the website themselves, they have to think about what kind of content they need, what sort of information they want on the website. So then when they do hire somebody like me, all that information is there. And I kind of speak in like a website language, so that helps me see what they're thinking and what they need. And I can just make it flow a little bit better, make the code cleaner, make the design a little bit more streamlined. So I think that helps too.
Well, one of the problems of you know, people do pick up these ready-made templates and things, but I have not met more than two or three writers who actually know anything about what happens after that. They put it up and nothing happens. They don't know anything about about searches, about how to get people to their site, mm-hmm. about how to put, well, what you tell us, what should an author do in order to make their site more vital, more...
Get more people to it, more traffic.
Yeah.
So the biggest thing is I see a lot of people, they build their website and they put it up and then that's that. They just
Nothing.
Go, yep, I have a website.
And they show it to their mother, and they show it, and their mother checks it all the time and say, oh, you know, I have a better photo for you. I mean, really, I could, your hair doesn't look quite right.
And, or you misspelled this.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Oh, I love those ones who come up with the misspelled. Somebody always finds that.
Yeah, of course. So that's a good start, telling your mother, but tell everybody. We all have Facebook. We all have social media. Tell all your friends. They might not be interested in what you are selling. They may not be interested in your book. But they're interested in helping you, so they might know somebody that's interested in your thing. And that just kind of gets that word of mouth starting, and all those links that you're putting out on Facebook or Twitter, whatever your social media that you use, those all help other people find it as well.
And now, what can an author do? There are things that you can put into your, SEOs and all this. What's all that stuff?
So SEO is search engine optimization. And the problem with SEO is if you're creating content only for SEO, you're creating content for robots. And robots aren't going to buy your book. So what you want to do is you want to create your content around the type of people that you want to be reading your content. And the search engines take into account things like how long people are on your website, how fast your website is. Because if it's fast, it's easy to use. They take into account how many pages people go to. On your website, and that's what helps you climb the rankings. So if you create content for people that they want to read, they'll keep coming back and the search engines will notice.
Well, if you say you're writing historical romance during the Revolutionary War, mm-hmm. now how do you get listed on the internet? So like people are typing in Revolutionary War romance books. How does that happen?
Okay, so
they're all such a mystery to everybody.
So if you build a website, it's just like building a house. You build the house, but you don't build a road to it. Nobody can get there, right? So you have to build that road. And the way that you would build that road is search engine bots go from website to website, and they basically click on links. So if there's a link to your website from another website, that creates that road to your website, and that gets them their first pass through. There are ways that you can submit your website, but you don't really need to do that. Post it on Facebook, post it on Twitter, find other authors that maybe want to do a blog post about you, find other ways to get a link on some other place's website that is in Google, and yours will get there too.
Huh. Okay, see, this is also for me because it's driving me crazy. Now, one of the things that I have been lucky that when people type in the word interview and a famous author's name, my program is coming up near the top. I don't know how I've done that. It's almost like a mystery to me. I do in the new website, they have all sorts of things like tags and mm-hmm. What are those things on the side that they have?
They have tags and categories.
Categories, yes.
So those used to matter a lot more than they do now. And what the search engines... I'm just going to say Google from now on. Okay, what Google? Because that's the only one that matters.
Who cares about the rest?
Yeah.
They are the world.
Yeah. So what Google had realized was people were just gaming that system. And if they told people what Google was taking into account to rank the websites, people were just doing that. They weren't caring about the end user. They weren't caring about how good the content was. They would just stuff their entire web page full of these words that were going to help them rank for whatever they wanted to rank for, and the content was complete junk. People wouldn't read it. It was useless. So that creates a bad experience for Google's users. So they want it to be the best possible experience. So the tags and all that don't matter as much anymore, if at all.
Oh, great. No, I did put in some tags, mm-hmm. and I have categories like for the blogs.
Yep.
And what you said to me about putting actually the name of the person, that's important.
Yes.
It never occurred to me, actually. I'm going to say, this is so silly. And tell Chris that put the name of the person in the title. It didn't click on me yet. That's how they search.
Yep. So if the categories and tags might not work for search engines, but they will work for people that are using your website. And that's what really matters. So those categories and tags help your website know what each post is about and which piece of content is about what. So if somebody's searching within your website or on Google, those tags are helping in that way.
And that it, they look nice. I've been putting them on to the different things, and then on the front page they come up and they're very pretty, and you can find like romance authors or mystery writer of America authors, and then all the every place I have them in the website, it pops up. It's like a miracle, isn't it?
Yes.
It is, really. People are, you know, it's, well, of course, you're young. You've been doing, you know, for anyone pre-Google, it's still sort of a magical mystery of how these things come up.
Mm-hmm.
So, so an author, for an author, what do you think of the essential sort of look should be? How many pages? Sometimes I've had a few authors who have gone overboard. I think they've had too many pages because they don't have the content like I do. I have more pages, but I have content for every page. But what do you think?
So one of the things I'm always telling clients is we want to get rid of as much content as possible. People think they need to fill their website with everything under the moon, everything about them, everything about their product. Instead, you just want the most important stuff. And I think sticking to that is your best bet, because people don't have time anymore to sort through an entire website and read hours and hours of content about you. They want to know exactly why they should be there as quickly as possible. So they want to know about you. I feel like, I know that you visited my website. One thing that you liked was I had the chat bubble that popped up.
I love that chat bubble. And I mean, it's a real one, and he really talks to you. I've got such a kick out of that. And, you know, when I was in a bad mood that day, I'm going to tell you, I had looked at so many things, and I knew that I had to go into this WordPress thing because that's the only way to go. You can't have massive amount of, you know, content without it. And I knew I had to do it before I had, like, 1,000 interviews, then I'd be really in trouble, right?
Yep.
So I said, okay, I'm going to do it. And I was, you know, I wake up and I start at 5 o'clock in the morning. And I think I got to you maybe around 9:30 or something. And I'd already gone through I don't know how much. And then just to have somebody chat with me, I could have chatted with him all day. So, it's just so cute. He's chatting, yes, yes, yes. And he's giving me free information, which I really appreciated, because everything you said was right. And that's nice.
Yeah, I find that the internet, people hide behind their websites, and I think that people have taken personality away from websites, but it's really all just about people. So if you can show who you are, I think you get a lot further on the internet. I that's why I run my company as just me. Yeah, I show my face instead of trying to hide behind as pretending to be an agency, which a lot of, you know, freelancers will do. They'll be like, oh, it's such and such agency. It's just me that's building the websites, so I'd rather be, here's who I am, and yeah.
And absolutely a delightful person. And as I said, I was tempted there. I had to control myself because I would have liked to have asked him more questions. And I'm you know, real happy when I'm typing away. And I thought, well, that's not fair because I'm not paying him for this. But it was really nice that you, as Chris just said, he tells people, go and do your own. Nobody ever tells you to do that. It's sort of like that you know, what's that movie? The one about Santa Claus. They play every year where it's Gimbel's and Macy's, and they say, well, shop at Macy's, shop at Gimbel's. You know, nobody ever I can tell you right now, I've talked to lots of internet people, lots of, you know, people who do website. Nobody ever says, well, start on your own and do it. I mean, immediately they want me to sign some contract and get me hooked, you know, because that's the way they are. But Chris isn't like that.
The reason is I don't want to build you. I can build you a website, but I don't want to build you the one that you don't need. So you don't. A lot of authors probably don't need to hire a web designer right away, or they don't need to pay somebody unless they do have the budget unless they have the budget and they don't have the time.
And there are. I mean, I know some authors who, let's just say they are financially in a good situation, and they want to spend their time writing.
Exactly.
And I can name about four of them right now who really, they don't want any, they don't want to do anything on there. They just want to be able to write their things and put a little bit of information. But they do need to connect. And this is one of the things that, you know, authors are, it's a really tough business today. You have to go out there. You have to have a website for people to go to. Because you meet, you go to these events, you go to book fests and signings, and everybody wants to go to your website. So if you don't have a really smart-looking website, that's bad.
Yes.
That's really bad. And, of course, you have to have Facebook. But then the people at Facebook want to go to your website, so it's a sort of vicious circle.
Yes.
You need to have something that does look good. And so, you know, if you want a really beautiful website, I know Chris can do it for you. And then there's a certain amount of when an author has a lot of books to sell, like they have a couple dozen books. And there are, I have some authors who have written in different genres, maybe they have romance books, they have their mystery books, and they have even nonfiction books. So mm-hmm. they have quite an array of books. Then in that case, they might need help with that, setting something up like that.
Definitely. I think, well, you were just talking about, those would be their categories. You said romance and nonfiction and sci-fi or whatever types of different categories that their books are under. So you have your categories. That's some organization right there. It all just comes down to what are you hoping for from a website? And I tell people to build their own first, not because I don't want to work with them. I just don't want to take their money until they know exactly what they need. Because when you build a website yourself, you have to think about what the website needs. You have to put some thought and put some time into it. And the key is you then can come to me and say, you will have some data. You'll have some information on the type of people that are visiting your website. So I can take that and find out what those people are looking for, and I can go through that data. Because otherwise, you're just coming to me and saying, I have this book, and I need a website. And it can be really tough to build you the website that you actually need.
Oh, I think that is so refreshing. It is so nice to have somebody who is straightforward and honest about it and doesn't try to, you know, finagle the deal and get you all signed up for something that you're not ready for, because you might not be ready for a major website.
Exactly.
And there are some authors, and I'm thinking of one in particular in our area, who has now expanded, not just from her books, she is also now doing seminars.
Oh, cool.
So she needs a little bit more. She needs yep. to be more proactive about getting out there and bringing people to her website to promote her seminars, and she wants to put, she's doing seminars now in person in various locations, but she wants to put some of her seminars on her website.
Okay.
And in something like that, she would need your help, because I know she's not technical enough
yep.
to do that. And see, by the time you've done that, you've sorted out, as Chris said, in your own mind what you want and how you want it presented. So Chris doesn't have to jump, you know, he doesn't have to miniaturize himself and, you know, start crawling around in your head and trying to figure out what in the heck you want, you know. It must drive you crazy.
Yes. Yes.
So you have sometimes people who whose websites are very complicated and they drive you crazy.
Yes, I try and be a little bit more picky about the type of clients I'll take on. I try and make sure that they know what they need and what they want before taking them on. I do a lot of work with other bigger design agencies where I don't have to work directly with the client, and that takes some of that away. Yeah.
Okay. Well, I think you're fantastic. I think you're, I've been, you know, so impressed with you, so impressed with your website and just your attitude, and it's refreshing, I can tell you, and that's what why I wanted you to come on, and I want you to, you know, do up an ad for me so I can put it on my website. I'll put an ad for you on my website, and I hope that I can get you some business, because I think you're absolutely delightful.
Thank you.
And it's Chris, your website is?
It's just chrishuffnagel.com.
And that's it, and that's all. And I typed, I was like, I think I was typing in like, somebody save me from WordPress. I don't know. I was typing in everything that morning because I was like, or I think at one point it's a WordPress drives me crazy. something like that. And I landed up with Chris, and it was a wonderful, wonderful thing to chat with him, and delightful to have him here in the studio with me. He's absolutely adorable. And if you want somebody to work with you on your website, you have to contact Chris. So thank you again, Chris, for coming in today. It's been fun. And I just want to tell everyone, you know, go to my new website, which is radio-joyonpaper.com, and you can see some of my recent guests. I want to say that I was so, so thrilled with Philip Vega, who was on, was so one of my favorite guests, and his book, Last Exit to Montauk, is a book that you will really enjoy. And if you get it, you will read it, and then you will say, I am never going to be the same person in a supermarket again, because every time you go down an aisle, you're going to say, what story is waiting for me in the next aisle? And that is Philip Vega's book, and the interview with him is up on my website under recent guests, and you can see that. It's a love story, and for all you baby boomers, it's a love story you'll relate to. It goes back in time to those wonderful days of your first love, and I just really, really got a kick out of this book. And I will tell you something. It starts off with forbidden rice. And after that, you will also want to buy forbidden rice. He should get money from the forbidden rice people. They should send him a year's supply. Maybe I'll send them an email saying, that's what I'm going to do. I'm going to send them a link to the interview and to the book, and perhaps they will send him a year's supply of forbidden rice, because he definitely puts a new flavor into your life when you read it. So it's Philip Vega. So do go to my website and see that. And meanwhile, remember, there's a link there so that you can send a question about intellectual property for Bill Larson, who will be in here next month answering your questions. And just remember what Bill said, don't sign anything without a lawyer. Any of these releases they send you over the internet are dangerous, and I am begging you, don't do it, because I don't want you to come to me and say, oh, I made a big mistake, and have sleepless nights. So just keep writing, and remember, one of the joys of life is to see your words on paper or to hear them in an audible version. It's so wonderful to listen to your words, and it's even better to see them on the big screen. But you're not going to see them on the big screen if you don't do it right. You have to write a really great book, get really great coverage, perhaps get on the New York Times bestseller list, and the producers will come to you, and you will be a happy, happy person. And meanwhile, say something nice to somebody today. I'm going to say something nice to Chris Huffnagel. Thank you for being here, Chris. You are delightful. And of course, to Big Ed in the control room. He's saluting me, and I'm saluting him, because I love to be saluted, and it just gives me a kick. So what can I say? Anyway, thank you for being with me today, and I've got, Brad Meltzer is going to be on March 8th. Look forward to it. Okay, bye-bye now.